the discourse around cancel culture is as crazy as cancel culture. Right now, the left is busy canceling all sorts of people for all sorts of reasons, from the most trivial to the less trivial to the seemingly legitimate. And the right is, of course, also cancels people. And then one of the things I find really interesting is that the left is also arguing, and the left is one of the primary pushers of cancel culture at this point. Anyway, the left is pushing this internally inconsistent position that there is no cancel culture, but if there were, it would be okay because the people who get canceled deserve it. And I don't understand the cognitive dissonance that would allow someone to publicly state both of those opinions. But where I really want to go with this is I think that to discuss cancel culture, we also have to acknowledge A, that it exists, and B, that it's nothing new, and C, that it might be a fairly standard part of especially authoritarian discourse. And by saying that, I'm not excusing it in any means. I'm just saying when we think about cancel culture and we think about it historically, of course, one of the first things we think of is the Hollywood blacklist, but it goes further back than that. I mean, really, what was the Inquisition is really cancel culture on a large scale. If you're holding opinions that we find objectionable, in this case, we will really cancel you. We won't just get you deplatformed and fire you. We'll fire you. And we have Giordano Bruno, the scientific heretics, the heretics against the Catholic Church. And it's not simply a tool of civilization either, because I have written before about the respect I have for Tecumseh's attempts to stop settler society from stealing land from Indians. And at the same time, Tecumseh and his brother would bash the heads of people within their community, other Shawnee, who disagreed with their policies, which is, again, going back to cancel culture. And I mean, that's canceling the person. And so I think if we really want to address cancel culture in a meaningful way, well, first, we have to acknowledge it's happening. Second, we have to talk about the current conditions that are leading to it. And there we have to question the assumptions that underlie it and question the reasons that are being done, the reasons that are being given for the cancellations. And then we have to ask ourselves if we agree with those reasons. We also have to ask ourselves if we would agree with analogous reasons if it was our ox being gored, if it was somebody we agreed with who was being canceled, would we still think that this is a righteous tool? Those are some of the questions we need to ask. And then in addition, I think we also need to recognize the that like selfishness, it doesn't do any good to try to make a society in which you say, hey, we just need to do away with greed. That's not how it works. You have to come up with ways that you can acknowledge that greed exists and then figure out how to deal with that socially. And it's the same here. We have to figure out on the larger scale how that desire to shut other people up who say things we don't like, how that we need to figure out how as a society to deal with that in a way that is best for society as a whole. And of course, this is one of the arguments for cancel culture, that if this person gives this opinion, it will harm society as a whole. And so that's why I stress the importance of really questioning our own assumptions through this and questioning every step of the rationale. I mean, my perspective on cancel culture is that I have never attempted to get someone deplatformed, and I have never attempted to get someone to lose their publishing contract. That's not how I operate. I operate on the idea that if somebody writes a book I don't like, that my job is to write a better book. Now, there's another part of this that comes up all the time, which is there are people who have accused me of participating in cancel culture because I block their emails after they write to me and insult me. And they'll say, you are censoring me. And the thing is, I'm not actually censoring you. What I am is removing myself from your audience by blocking you. And there's a big difference. That's the difference between if someone is having an event at a university that I don't like, I don't go. And it's likewise, I don't have to give anyone access to me. There's a difference between that and denying them access to the public sphere. And for me, that's really my breakdown, is I have no problem denying anybody access to me. And at the same time, I've had books published by presses, and those presses have also published open sadists. They have published woman-hating horrors, H-O-R-R-O-R. They've published dreadful stuff. And I've never even mentioned to the publisher that I don't like that you publish them, because why would I? Publisher can publish them, they can publish me. Let's duke it out in discourse fashion. And one of my favorite people to think about with this is George Gerbner. I interviewed him back in the 90s. George Gerbner was the TV violence guy, by which I mean he's the one, when the people say how much violence there is on TV, he was the one who did those studies for 40 or 50 years. And a couple of things about him. One of them is he says that everybody misinterprets his work. He's dead now. Everybody misinterpreted his work. But he was not arguing that violence per se should be eliminated from television. What he was saying was that it's important to look at in movies who does what to whom. So if a white guy can commit violence against a woman with impunity in a movie, well, that's something we need to attend to. And on the other hand, if a woman commits an act of violence in a movie, well, the entire movie has to be about how she would do this. That's one thing that I think is important to say about him. But the thing I really wanted to emphasize about George Gerbner right now is the other thing is he was as strong as anyone I've ever met in terms of a diversity of voices, that he explicitly thought that neo-Nazis should be allowed to speak. And what you do is you allow them to speak and then you disagree with them and you show why their logic doesn't work. You show why they're, you don't cancel them. And I need to say, and the reason I bring him up is because he felt very strongly that literal Nazis should be allowed to speak, and then you rebut them. And in World War II, he literally killed Nazis. He literally was a partisan in, or was dropped into Eastern Europe to fight and kill Nazi soldiers. And so he has very strong Antifa cred, and he would be horrified by the cancellation that those types of groups are doing. So to sum up, I think we have to recognize that one of the hallmarks of tyranny is the silencing of dissenting voices. And it is incumbent upon us to move back to that notion of, I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it.